Oh, top of the morning to you on Tuesday, March 17th, 2015. This is Brian Madden, a very Irish name, and luckily for you, the only Irish accent, the time I will use the Irish accent today. So thank you for joining us. I'm Brian Madden Live. I'm here in San Francisco with Jack Madden. How are you, Jack?
I'm wonderful.
Also joining us by the Skype is Gabe Knuth from Omaha.
Hello. Good morning.
And our guests today are from Boston. We've got two folks from Reddo Mobility. Joining us is Josh Epstein and Itzik Spitzen. So, Josh and Itzik, how are you two guys today?
We're great.
Very good.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so Tuesday is our regular podcast day, and St. Patrick's Day falls on Tuesday this year. So it is St. Patrick's Day, and I imagine you guys in you are in Boston, which is like St. Patrick's HQ, at least for the U.S., I feel like.
I think on this coast, for sure, yeah. There are about, I think, six Irish bars within half a block radius of us. So
if we hear any sounds, sirens or yelling or otherwise.
But it's interesting because this topic today is actually more exciting than, you know, just drinking green beer at some Irish bar in some, you know, medium old city.
I think you're right, for sure.
Which is true because I don't know a lot. Jack, you've written more about Reddo Mobility.
Gabe has.
Okay. Gabe, you've written more about Reddo Mobility than I have. I mean, I don't know much about the company, which is why I'm very excited to have this podcast today because I want to find out about the technology. But I do know that you do something that I have always called app refactoring, which is taking Windows apps and making them, you know, kind of UI transformation to work on mobile devices. And that's kind of what you do, but you also don't like the term app refactoring. So I'm just going to erase everything I know about Reddo Mobility and say, Josh Epstein, Itzik Spitzen, welcome. What in the world do you guys do?
thanks for the opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, app refactoring, first off, you know, we've really been around for about 6 months or so, and there hasn't been a category, so we appreciate at least being put in a category. App refactoring, the term itself, to understand what we think we are, I think Itzik should probably go through a quick discussion of kind of how we do it. But in short, we think app refactoring sounds like a one-time deal, kind of like you're migrating an app from one thing to another. And that's not really how we look at what we do. We look at it more as adding another layer that allows, you know, a virtualization layer that allows you to sort of re-experience the UI in different ways. But Itzik, do you want to? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt because I want to take a step back myself and just let me tell you like what my my assumptions are about this conversation, right? You know, Jack and Gabe and I wrote the book The VDI Delusion about 3 years ago. It was 3 years ago this month. It might have been on St. Patrick's Day it was released, actually. So literally 3 years ago.
You were here. Yeah. I think it was.
So, you know, VDI has had a, you know, up and down kind of history and everything. I feel like nowadays, you know, since we did the VDI delusion, we wrote about the new VDI reality. We think that the, you know, storage is better, the protocols are better. We can do GPUs now. We've got, you know, good graphics, that kind of stuff. So the thing is, VDI as a technology, I think actually pretty much works nowadays. The concept of taking a Windows app and running it in a remote data center, whether you own it or the cloud owns it or it's in your company, doesn't really matter. The idea that I can have a full Windows app, that's the reason I have Windows apps is because they're fully integrated with my workflows and my macros, and they've been around forever, and the guys who wrote them are dead, and I can't migrate off, and that's all fine. So we know that Windows apps are going to be around for a long time, and VDI does a pretty good job of delivering that out, or RDSH, or whatever that is, to, you know, I can use it on different devices, it can be outside the firewall, it has a potential to be more secure, I can use them on Mac, through the web, all that kind of stuff. It's all good, but now we're all running around with phones and iPads, and so a lot of times people try to use VDI or use Windows apps from a phone or Windows apps from an iPad, and it's a horrible experience, but it's not a horrible experience because the VDI is bad. It's a horrible experience because you're using an application that's meant for a big screen, a keyboard, a mouse, a precision pointing device, and then trying to use it on a tennis screen with your big fat finger instead of the way it was meant to be used. And so, VDI can't solve that problem. VDI has done as much as VDI can do. Yeah, we can get the app. It can be performant and graphically beautiful and everything on my phone or on my tablet. But at the end of the day, it's a Windows app that is integrated with our Windows ecosystem. If we were going to migrate off to an iOS version of the app, come on, iOS has been around for like, you know, 8 years. If we were going to migrate off to a web app, we would have done it 15 years ago. If we were going to migrate off to an iOS app, we would have done it 5 years ago. If it's still a Windows app today, there's probably a reason it's still a Windows app, yet we still want people to be able to use it on their mobile devices from, you know, small screens with touch and no keyboards and all that kind of stuff.
Or use certain functionality from it.
That's a key.
I'm sure we'll get to that a lot more of that later.
But that's my intro rant to set up this conversation. Because before people are like, well, why are you jumping into what? Like, this is my problem with the world right now. VDI has done all it can do, and yet I still can't use my Windows apps on my iPad because my iPad doesn't have the right UI for what I want to do. And that's where I'm hoping you guys can help.
Yes, exactly. So I think you actually described the problem domain that we're actually solving very accurately. So what we're doing is we're actually our approach is to, first of all, abstract the Windows applications. And not just the Windows applications, we're looking at the broader thing of abstracting everything into this layer that allows you visually to kind of like re-envision your mobile application, which you described the problem. It's not only about resolution, it's about the way you interact with the application. It's about the gestures that you usually need. It's about also another thing that you probably have this thick Windows app contains tons of, you know, different scenarios that you can do all sorts of things in. And on the field, you need only part of it. You need only a few scenarios. So we're talking about a concept of micro app, kind of like distilling, you know, the application into, you know.
So take like a common electronic health record system, right? A giant application suite typically requires a thick Windows client, and it's built to serve, you know, a huge set of audiences, right? Now, some of those audiences, say nurses, doctors, have very specific mobile workflows that they actually want to interact with that application, you know, through a very specialized or focused mobile workflow. And that's really where Red Oak can come in to help create these micro apps. And we do it in a very different way.
Right. So our approach is quite unique, we believe. So what we do is, the first thing we do is we connect to those Windows apps, now in the future some other apps. And abstract away detach from the application itself and create what we call a very visual view using HTML5. So we're with zero effort, we take the Windows app, we decompose it, and we recompose it back in HTML5. Now, this alone provides us with the ability to do many great things, one of which would be that planner that allows, you know, a very basic user, I would say power user, business analyst, or, you know, or a high-level person that has some, you know, understanding with technical stuff but doesn't have to know anything about development or something like that. And they go ahead and point and click the elements that they want to have on the mobile. They not only just point and click, they get suggestions from the system on how to think about mobilizing this application. So it's a very structured and guided through process that allows you to really think about the specific process that you want to transfer to the mobile device. So this cycle is so short that you can just click publish and push it to the application server, which is, you know, our third layer, and allows people to just consume those HTML5 applications from their mobile device in a very mobile-friendly way. But those apps, is, again, they don't have to represent the entire application. They can kind of like should be the scenarios that you need for the mobile device for that specific user or use case that you want to serve. And that cycle can be iterative. So you don't have to create it once, click publish, and okay, it is what it is, that's what I have. No, it's an iterative process, and we think about it as something very dynamic that the organization can adjust to new needs, to new market moving needs, and really change the application and adjust the application online and as they go with additional capabilities and additional or maybe different approaches and so forth. So that's maybe one of the things that we see different than refactoring.
So let me jump in there real quick because there's a couple of things to be clear. So first of all, we're talking about Windows applications. So Windows is still running. The applications are still running on Windows. They're just back in some data center somewhere. And when you say you sort of abstract in, you're basically going into the UI, right? And saying, okay, I've got this Windows application that's meant to be run on a 24-inch screen. If I had a 4-inch screen, I want this button, this drop-down box, this little display thing, and like this slider. And I can sort of package those up, and then the HTML5 is sort of delivering a new UI that I consume on my client device, but the Windows app is still running in the back-end data center somewhere.
That's true. And the nice thing about it is, first of all, we're mapping it to true HTML5. So if you had a combo box or whatever, a select box or a list or whatever, you see it in native HTML. So the data is extracted from the original application. We really host it in real HTML5 controls that feel native and are native on the client. The other thing that is very very important to remember is that we allow the users to preserve the entire logic. So the thing is that we are the logic is encapsulated. There are not only controls; those are actually processes, like login screens and adding data into something or just editing a list or selecting something and so forth. We don't need to replicate that. We don't need to redo that. The only thing we do is kind of like represent it in another platform, which preserves the entire logic, which runs safely on the data center. So that's kind of like trying to repurpose whatever you've got and just abstract it, detach it from the origin, which is Windows apps, and make it something new that feels new, but still running the same business logic behind without any tweaks.
And then I think your point about it being an iterative process is interesting, because one of the things that was always I feel like people had a hard time understanding with this type this concept is that if I have a Windows desktop app and if it's full screen at 24 inches, that menu bar has got a billion little options and little buttons and all this kind of stuff. And if I say, okay, I want to make a 5-inch version of this application now, so on my big version, I can fit 100 buttons. On my little version, I can fit 5 buttons. Which 5 buttons make the cut?
And I think I can jump in here with the answer to that is that that big app, if it has 100 buttons, then that could very easily end up as 100 different apps. And that might be an extreme case. But the idea is that and I'm just thinking with my this is how we generally think about building mobile apps. If you're thinking how do I fit those 100 buttons onto a 4-inch phone, then
right, because I don't
then
need...
you're approaching it backwards. The thought should be, okay, I have this specific task to do right now. What buttons do I actually need to do this task?
You may end up with
10 or 50 or 100 different apps.
Yeah, because when I'm using it on my phone, probably my app turnaround time is 3 minutes. Like, it's probably if I'm going to be using the app for 3 minutes or less, it's on my phone. If I'm using it for 3 to 12 minutes, it's a tablet. If it's more than 12 minutes, it's on a laptop or whatever.
That's
exactly right.
What are the 15 different things I can do in 3 minutes? And let's give me 15 different apps or views or microlets or whatever you're calling them, micro apps, and build them around that specific functionality I need to do. And that's what you're saying too. That doesn't have to be it's not a consulting project team that says, these are thou apps.
It's some manager comes in and says that can say, hey, this is the workflow that we need to press these 3 buttons for these people to get their job done. And then this iterative idea, if 6 months later or 2 weeks later, someone comes in and is I really would like to be able to we just need to think something has changed and we need this other button now. Then just go in and add it and update your micro app, and there you go.
Yeah.
There's this discussion out there of disposable apps, right? Of basically that enterprise business apps are evolving so quickly that this idea that, none of them can be formal development projects with full development cycles. They have to be this kind of rapid development approach where you can turn things out to keep pace with how things are changing. And this does support that. And the nice thing, as Itzik said, the UI logic, all the validation logic on the original application is still all in place, right? So it's not like you need to, really worry about breaking the underlying app. Is all you're doing is driving an existing app that's fully QA'd, fully stable. You can't corrupt anything with this approach.
And that's suddenly occurring to me that you know, because I think we were going to get into the conversation maybe a little bit later about, you know, is this a technology for like right now until we replace our Windows apps, or is this something that we keep on riding into the future? And it's suddenly occurring to me that like, hey, if our Windows app that's running back in the data center, if it's working and it's been doing its thing forever, almost if you start from scratch, then that means that every time you want to build a new applet, it's a lot more work as opposed to just being able to go back to your existing Windows app that you can continuously reuse however you need it.
I mean, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, the question of, is this a bridge? I guess in some ways it might be, but it's a long bridge, right? I mean, this stuff can live on for, and will live on for a long time. And this certainly gives businesses a lot of options with how to leverage that investment, right? As well as the full VDI app virtualization infrastructure that's in place that's proven and works, right? So,
But that goes back to what Brian was saying too. You know, if you were going to move, you would have moved, but you rely on this Windows app for a long time. So I think in the article I wrote last week, I think it was, you know, maybe it's a bridge, but it's a bridge for like the next, you know, 30 years until you get rid of some of these Windows applications. So call it permanent, but
that's true. To some degree, we look at our product. First of all, yeah, there is some bridge, things to it, because we do now Windows applications, and people look at Windows applications as, you know, very old and probably will disappear at some point. It will take a lot of time to disappear. Mostly those applications that are ISV, kind of like you think about the healthcare industry or the insurance industry, they either invested tons of efforts in the last 2 decades to develop, or they bought something and they can't really get it to mobile, nor, you know, upgrade it, because they don't have control over the code, they don't have control over the IP and stuff like that. So they just need a way to extend it to the mobile device. But if we look at our technology, what we're trying to do here is completely separate the applications and the technology the application is representing, like Windows application, in the future some other technologies, like even to the point that it connects to data sources and so forth, and allow you with the same planner, with the same, you know, point and click, very visual, code-free environment to create applications rapidly and respond to the market needs very rapidly, involving maybe some Windows apps, some maybe web apps, some, you know, database apps and so forth, and ending up with a user experience for mobile or desktop that or thin clients that are fit at the time that you're creating it.
It's kind of like those old IBM commercials from 10 years ago where it's like that universal widget where, so you can have this, you know, you sort of extract out the UI and some of the business logic, I guess, and it theoretically can be anything in the back end, and you're making it now into HTML5 or whatever happens next. And then, like, to Jack's point, the back end can stay the back end for whatever. Kind of like what BizTalk server did 15 years ago. And it's just doing that now.
To fill me in on that one.
but it's just doing that out to the actual end device now instead of just to the web, which is, yeah, that's awesome.
No, exactly right. And there's all sorts of intricacies, obviously, of delivering, you know, highly responsive HTML5 to different end devices. And that's really where we focus. The sort of utilities we built out within the kind of the planner environment that we call it are all focused on creating adaptive user experiences. So adaptive in the sense that, you know, you might have a specific interface for a tablet, a specific interface for a mobile phone. You might design different interfaces for different roles. Most of the work has been focusing on building out that that utility and that experience for the super user or the the business analyst who's not a developer. So
let's talk. One of my favorite questions with all sorts of app transformation and mobile and enterprise mobile app development companies. I think we can all agree that the enterprise mobile app space is several years behind the consumer mobile app space. We're at the point where most of us, you know, we all have email on our phones. We have a few other things on our phones, but the big question is, and 2015 right now, it does feel like the – I don't know if it's just me, but it feels like we're in a – this year is this is the year that we're starting to think much more about enterprise mobile apps. It's not just EMM and mobile people. It's everybody that's talking about enterprise mobile apps. So my question for you is what's tipping people over to actually – get their projects started this year, this month, right now, versus companies that haven't crossed the, you know, haven't gone over that bridge to start their mobile app projects.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, certainly there's so much activity in the space in terms of technologies, right? I mean, there's lots of rapid app development technologies, lots of application platform as a service. And then obviously this, you know, app transformation or mobile user experience virtualization. On the customer side, you know, it's been interesting. We launched in September, and are still in a, you know, we're working with tens of customers on our early customer release, and it's been, it's been really easy to find partners, people that are you know, willing to work with an earlier company to try this out. I don't know the answer specifically to your question, but it seems like it just like 2014 was like finally like EMM, AMM, MDM, whatever. That's old hat. Like everyone has just been sort of iterating on that for 12 months, and like they got it down, and then just been hungry to find projects that they can bite off and work on. Mm-hmm. That frankly for us that don't require a massive development project. So I agree that there's definitely seems to be a huge amount of momentum building. And we've just felt like we've sort of untapped some sort of pent up demand for something that they could start relatively quickly with relatively low investment, right? I mean, we're not talking about a major implementation. We're not talking about hiring developers. We're talking about, you know, a project to latch onto existing, you know, say ZenApp infrastructure, and start playing around with, you know, some apps. So I don't know. What do you think?
It's interesting. One thing that we've been noticing is that, and that I wanted to ask you about is for use cases for extended enterprise contractors, field workers, versus, you know, I hate the term knowledge worker and task worker. So I like the term more extended enterprise versus, I guess, people that sit behind desks. But I'm getting the vibe that right now that the this current wave is probably tipping more towards extended enterprise field worker mission critical app use cases. I mean, you know, we can get Slack on our iPhones now, and that certainly helps us. But that's not really revolutionizing our job, because we've had messaging on mobile devices for years.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think I guess we've been I've been surprised on how I don't know what the right term is, how basic or fundamental some of the use cases we've seen are. I mean,
right.
You know, take the healthcare industry. Like, forget remote, you know, knowledge workers or remote extended workers. We're talking about people walking around inside the firewall, right? With even, you know, enterprise owned devices, just to mobilize certain business processes that have to happen while you're on your feet, right? Mm-hmm. So there's literally been a lot of interest in that category. Insurance industry, you know, basic processes like sales teams or claims adjusters that are out by nature in the field and have been carrying around laptops and tethering into VPNing in to sort of get some basic activities done. You know, to some extent, it's really the stuff we've been working on has been really basic business processes that have obvious mobile use cases, and there mm-hmm. just hasn't been an effective way to really do them.
Right. And I also think.
I'm sorry. Go on.
Sorry. I also think, you know, if we look at our currently, you know, early customer base, and we look, they range between those customers that don't even have any mobile strategy at all, but they need this mobilized. So they're within the firewall. They can just open Safari on the iPhone and just consume the applications, range from that and they don't have EMM, and they don't have the, you know, still they don't have any of those solutions in place. But since they're connected within the firewall and so forth, still allows them to do things like that in the hospital or places like that. And also all the way through, you know, those organizations that already have those AirWatch, ZenMobile, or what have you, you know, on the front end, they already have the strategy, they already have their mail delivered and some maybe some apps that are compatible with mobile, but they strive for more. They constantly ask for more accessibility to those apps, to those capabilities, because they realize that those devices that they hold are powerful and can help them, you know, do things in a more productive way when they're on the run and when they, you know, just, you know, outside the office or even inside the office, just not near at their desk.
Yeah, and this is, you know, as I'm listening to this, it sounds like, I mean, you mentioned ZenApp earlier, and I want to dig into the technology a little bit and how it works and everything, but the parallels to, if you look at how ZenApp got started, you know, Citrix WinFrame in the 1990s, and that was a way for us to, you know, remotely deliver Windows applications to, you know, non-Windows clients or to clients that did not have it installed. And no one, you know, in 95, no one was going out there saying, we need a, you know, MetaFrame, WinFrame strategy. We need a remote app strategy. Like, that was not it. It was, like, there was no strategy in those days. It was, we had this actual problem. Like, in my very first company, where I worked time on the help desk, we used WinFrame to deliver our help desk app because the help desk app was slow in our Houston office. And so we didn't go out with, like, some coming back from Synergy and VM whatever with this big strategy. It's like, oh, my God, this thing might make our help desk app faster. And that was it was as simple as that. And then we had that, and we're like, oh, my gosh, this Oracle client we have has to be updated, like, once a week. We do it on 100 computers. If we did it on, you know, WinFrame, we can have 15 users per WinFrame server. Oh, my gosh, that'd be insane. And so I kind of feel like it's the same thing now. So now we've got ZenApp for 20 years, and, you know, we've got people who are running around. They've been using ZenApp forever, but they are these extended workforce users. They're out in the field, and they're going, you know, they're opening up their laptop on their car hood, and they're getting on the VPN, and they're hooking their application to get into this big CRM system just so they can find the address of where they're going next. And so in that case, this is a no-brainer. Like, they're not trying to, like, mobilize the enterprise. It's like, hey, could I get, you know, this one view into this fat Windows desktop app on my phone so I can just pull up my phone and check it in 10 seconds instead of having to, like, get out the laptop and the, you know, EVDO card. Wait, whatever. Jesus Christ. 4G card. And, you know, all this. Like, I mean, I feel like that's the kind of thing where it is like, you know, to your point about how that's the very basic thing. Like, they, you know, if you're using ZenApp already and you're trying to, like, walk around balancing a laptop in your hand and a VPN connection and all this kind of stuff, and then I can just take this right on top of my existing infrastructure and have sort of mobilize one view into one app, you do that. And then once you have that, it's like, hey, we can also use it for this and this and this and this. And then in 5 years, they get 100 apps. But I really feel like right now it's just the slam dunk easy stuff.
Yeah, and that's very different from, like, what should our mobile strategy should be? This is, like you said, it's oh my gosh, we need this right now. This is awesome.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, we were at Citrix Summit. I can't tell you the number of Citrix channel partners, right, that came up and basically at once understood what we're doing. They literally opened up their device and they went into one of their own homegrown systems, showing us how ZenApp, you know, delivers one of their applications to their phones. And you know, we're actually working with someone, actual internal apps that they have themselves. And what's cool is that it does fit into a broader I mean, there's a great mobile story here, right? We can integrate directly with, you know, AirWatch or Zen Mobile. I mean, it does mesh nicely with a broader mobility strategy, but it is kind of a quick on-ramp, I guess, to making this happen.
Right.
So can we talk a little bit more about the technology? I mean, you know, we talked about how your you know, Windows is still running. You mentioned sort of integration with ZenApp, and if you're at Citrix Summit, then you're sort of aware of that channel. But just kind of take me through, you know, if I'm listening, I'm like, yeah, this sounds good. Now what? What to do? How's it work?
Yeah, so there are three actually basic modules that are working together to provide the solution. So the first module is installed on the desktop session. It can be a physical desktop. It's not likely to be the situation, but probably going to be virtual, VDI, ZenApp, you know, even kind of like even another technology like IDS or terminal service. So you have this Windows running. And on this Windows, we have this seamless service that you don't see, you don't feel. It's not consuming any special resources, but it's intercepting those Windows applications that run. And as Josh has mentioned, what it's doing really is it's running in different layers, Windows layer, you know, language-specific layer, if it's .NET or, you know, SAP-specific technologies and so forth. It's running on that those layers and kind of like intercepting the data out and the type of controls, delivering it to the server, which in turn actually turns it into HTML5 on the fly. So zero effort. The first phase is just to take those Windows apps, recompose them in HTML5, and creating a bidirectional channel to allow every click and interaction on the HTML5 to affect the original application. So we have this out of the box. When you open the planner, that's what you see. The planner is the second piece of this puzzle. The planner is allowing you to see the original application in an HTML5 format. It's pretty reliable to the source. It looks like the original application, zero effort, as I said before, but it's HTML5. The data is really on the client. The controls are really native. And now at this point, you can point and click in the planner, a very visual way, can point and click and get suggestions on how to transform this application to a mobile device. You see practically two sides. The left side is the original application reflected in HTML5. You click on the elements, and you get them on the right side, which looks like a mobile device, and you just can see WYSIWYG-wise how the application is going to look like. You can break it into views. You can kind of like drag those capabilities, which are basically components. They encapsulate the flow. They encapsulate everything. The only thing that we change is we map it to true HTML5 controls that look like mobile, but the business logic and all the flow and the process is still bound to it on the back end. And then once you finish with that process, creating your kind of like mobile flow, you click publish. You can save some versions and version control, whatever, but you click publish, and it's being pushed to an HTML5 server, which is practically IIS with some extensions that we've added. That's allowing the end user to access this web server and get the new micro app in their mobile device controlling the data center, controlling the application that really adds, runs on the data center. So the mobile user is actually accessing this entry point on a web server, and they get the specific scenario that you designed on their HTML5 browser. It can be plain browser, just Safari on iPhone or Android browser. And it can be a secure browser. It can be AirWatch browser. It can be, Works Web. It can be, any type of secure browser. And it can even be hybrid app. We can containerize it within the AirWatch container or Zen Mobile container or just, PhoneGap. Just put it on your desktop, Springboard. And you click it and you get native app, but it's actually HTML5 and it's driven from the server or driving the server to run the original application at the back end. Does it make sense?
Yeah. Okay.
And it's great that it works on physical and virtual.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have a VDI or a remote desktop infrastructure to pull this off. You can run it on physical desktop as well.
That's true. Even though we think, there are some challenges with this model just because, the desktop is not always on or might not be on. Or if it's a laptop, you just fold it and put it in your bag. So you can't really do anything remotely with it. It's in your bag. But if it's virtual, it's always on. It's in the data center. You can connect from your thin client when you're at the desk and lock your machine and connect from your mobile device to the same state of the application. You don't even have to launch a new instance.
That's my question. So I literally have like Word. We'll use Word as an example, right? Like I have Word running in my Windows instance, wherever it happens to be. I'm like mid-document, and then I, walk away and I pull my phone back up and I can get the HTML5 interface into that same running instance of Word with the cursor still blinking at the exact spot that I left it.
Exactly. So Word is not a great example because we're not focusing on productivity apps.
Right, because we have those, yeah.
Right. So let's think about, your CRM. You're working on this customer or, you were working on this customer and you left it kind of like half-baked or half-done and you're connecting through the mobile device and you get the same customer on the screen and you can keep on, whatever you do there, add data or whatever. So yes, you can connect to the same state that you were working on because it's the same VDI session, the back end, or Zen app session that is running at the back end.
And this, and what was clear that I sort of took away from that is that your agent that runs within Windows, it's not screen scraping. You're not like pixel. It's not like using AutoIt and trying to put coordinates back and forth. I mean, you talk about the intelligence at the Windows control level or the .NET framework level or you know, what it, like you're sort of like trying to get into the app, and I guess you can fall back to a screen pixel pushing if you need to, but like you're intelligently getting into the app and figuring out what the controls are.
That's accurate. So we start, we want to get as much information as we can on the data that the controls or widgets are hosting and the type of controls that we see and the type of interactions that we do. As long as we get those three, we don't really care if the grid looks like that or like this and it's, you know, colors and, you know, up, you know, upside down or whatever. We just get the data. We reconstruct it in HTML5. It might look very similar, not exactly the same in HTML5, but at this point, you're kind of like, you know, you're mapping it to the mobile and you get true controls.
One of the cool things is, as you actually just think conceptually about truly mobilizing a desktop app, right? It becomes, you know, the complexity comes not in, like, it's not technical, but just, I guess, conceptual, like a combo box on a desktop application. You don't necessarily want to show that as a combo box at all on a mobile app. It might just be literally like a list of items that you press one and it advances to a next screen. So you have, you know, since we are going down to this sort of recomposed control, you can actually start really radically changing the look of the desktop application to make it more suitable for mobile interaction.
Like what was one screen or one form before might be two different screens, or it might be a little flowchart of a tree of screens based on what you're choosing.
Exactly. And we have like a tree view, right? It's expanding and you see nodes and so forth. Not a very pleasant experience on a mobile device, right? With all the hierarchies and so forth. And it appears that you only need like three nodes to be selected on a mobile device, because that it is what it is. What you need is to select whatever, the hospital that you're working on or something like that. So you make it a very simple selection, maybe a button, okay? So you're transforming something that was used to be very different on the desktop and making it something else on the new form factor.
Well, so what I've been wondering as we've been having this conversation, what about targeting desktop clients? I mean, even if you do have a client that has a keyboard and a mouse, there's still plenty of opportunities to reduce the complexity of this app that we're talking about that has 100 buttons. And if your desktop user only needs 30 of those buttons instead of 50 of those buttons, but they're still using a keyboard and mouse based interface.
I want my mom to have this. I'm going to give her an app that's got one button. Email Brian, email Jack, email Dennis, email Meredith, and that's it. There's no retrieve, there's no send, there's no whatever. It's like she turns it on, pushes a picture of someone's face, and can start typing to them.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time.
Yes,
I think it's you know, mobile is something people are thinking about. This is a use that we think is very cool, but is not necessarily something people are thinking about. Really interesting when you start thinking about what you can do with thin client delivery, right? I mean, clearly you can deliver a full VDI session to a thin client, but it becomes very interesting if you want to have very scaled down, you know, browser delivered workflows.
Well, this is thin client in this case is like an HTML5 browser. Like you're talking like Chrome box, not mm-hmm. Wise.
And when you
right,
yeah, so definitely that's something that we, as Joseph mentioned, we're talking about it all the time. It's a matter of focus at the moment. We think that, you know, it's very important to deliver a solution for mobile users because that's what people want. That's what people are looking for. But generally, our technology separating again the applications from those components from which you can recompose your application and just distill what you need is something very generic that can go to thin clients and just plain browsers as well. And again, as I mentioned before, in the future, different types of application, not just Windows.
So when you're talking, so you got this planner, which is like your designer, and you say it's like a side by side. So I've got kind of the original app with the sort of a generic transformation to HTML5, and then you've got my sort of client view, and I can sort of, you know, see left side versus right side, and I kind of drag and drop and set it all up. Do I target different views there? Because I imagine also, even if I've got this task-based workflow, you know, I might want to build one. I don't know if I'm using the right words. I might want to build one view that's a 3.5 to 6-inch screen, another view that's a 7 to 10-inch screen, and then but I want it also where it kind of automatically selects the right view based on, like, if I access it from my phone versus my tablet versus my desktop, it's the same app, but I want different sort of renditions of it, depending on what device I use.
But should it be the same app, whether you're accessing it from your tablet or, I mean, because very likely if you have your tablet in your lap versus your phone in your hand, you're probably doing different tasks. So,
assuming I want the same task.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we definitely think about it, and what we see is actually your organization tend to have two different – if they want it for two different form factors, they probably have two different you call it views. We call it micro apps. One defined for a tablet with some more capabilities, some more fields shown, some more – you know, they have more real estate. It's usually longer time that you can spend on a tablet than on a phone. And so the design is slightly different, or in some cases radically different. And they might have one for a smartphone. It can work on any smartphone because it stretches and so forth. So it's responsive to a degree that allows you to consume from different resolutions, but phone, smartphone as one kind of like form factor, and another different form factor that is a tablet that allows you to do a few more things. So you probably have typically two layouts if you want those two form factors to be valid.
And you can structure them as separate apps, or you can just, you can create an adaptive experience where depending on which device you're accessing the application from, it'll serve up the appropriate.
Yeah, the default is that it will work on both, but you definitely can separate. You can separate to the level of, kind of like landscape and portrait views and different devices. You can go, it's crazy, you can go to a resolution of this device will get this and that device will get that, but that's really crazy in terms of maintenance. You don't want that.
And so can I also build one of your micro apps that pulls from multiple Windows apps in the back end? So I want it to look like one app to the user, but it's actually, 15 different buttons on four different executables on the back end desktop.
That's definitely something that is on our roadmap called Mashup, and which is actually, makes a lot of sense on our side to do, because once we can connect to Windows app, we can connect to multiple Windows app and make life easier for you in order for, you to do something. You don't need to go to two different apps. And yes, definitely on the roadmap, currently not implemented, but we are definitely thinking about it, as again, our roadmap is very wide. We're talking about different technologies, and Mashup is definitely, think about, once we support other technologies, Mashup between technologies, one Windows app and some services, for instance.
Like a Windows app, you mean like web services or database or just?
Yes, yes.
I guess actually, because you look at what I use today, and it's in my workflow is it is a mashup of iOS, web, Windows, Mac, all these different apps, and I've got some I use for some reasons and some I use for other reasons, and it would be kind of cool if I could truly turn that around to task based, like push this button to publish, and it hits the 15 different apps I need and does whatever I want in the workflow and all that kind of stuff. So it sort of does become a combination of, I guess workflow management is as much part of this as the actual sort of UI refactoring or whichever word I forget you want to call it.
mobile experience
visualization is our preferred term, but you can think different.
I don't know where we got that term from. Where did we get app refactoring from? I think we just made it up.
Gartner,
we
had I think.
Oh, okay. Well, made it up, still stands.
Just thinking like all the way back to the first looking at Project Golden Gate like 3 years ago.
Yeah. where were you guys 3 years ago? So this, you guys are 6 months old, right? I mean, your product came out in September.
That's true. But the company actually started, we spun out of another company called Gizmox that was actually was an HTML5 development tool set. Gizmox's product was called Visual Web GUI. It's actually still out there. It's free now. We opened it up. There's a decent, sized user community out there. And so Visual Web GUI was a very cool, ahead of its time probably, HTML5 development platform for .NET developers. Actually, it was a plugin to Visual Studio, allowed you to build, cross-platform mobile apps using C#, using .NET development skills. For a lot of reasons, the development tool space is a tough business. Lots of people chasing that. We had this this Skunkworks project that became Reddo leveraged a lot of our expertise. We felt it was a really cool time to be launching this type of technology. So we spun it out and officially launched back in September.
Well, first of all, congratulations. This is and launching anything, because that's just, you know, like, that's awesome. But this is exactly what I want. This is my kind of hot button for this year. And I've been talking about this at the shows for the past 3 or 4 years. You know, now that we kind of, because I had so much to bitch about for VDI 3 years ago. And the storage vendors fixed it. And, you know, the networking is kind of okay now. And we got HTML5 clients. And we have, you know, there's better app delivery tools now. And there are, you know, we can do GPUs and share, you know, virtual GPU and all this kind of stuff. So it kind of got to a point where, you know, as I said, the whole VDI, XenApp, remoting desktop, remote Windows is kind of working. And then it's like, well, why isn't this taking over the world? It's like, oh, well, you know, Windows still sucks on my phone. Or Windows still sucks on my tablet. And that was... you know, there was a couple years ago. So I think VDI and these technologies kind of really started to live up to what they had started promising us, you know, 8 years ago. And so now I kind of latched onto this concept, which I didn't think really existed exactly, where, well, we just need some kind of, maybe I was the one that started using the term app transformation. I just want to transform the UI, still run on Windows in the back end, because this is not, we're not using like Wine and, you know, emulating on an iPad. You know, we wrote about that, like, really kind of heady stuff. That's not really happening anytime soon.
And again, you have all the same UI mismatch issues.
Yeah, and, right, exactly. And this, frankly, this goes back to Project Vertigo. Project Vertigo from
Project
Citrix.
Project Vertigo.
1999, iForum. Do you guys know? Were you guys in this world in 1999? I'm asking Josh or Itzik.
No, we weren't there, but I know about this project.
You heard of this? Yeah. Someone won a Dodge Viper on this, and I kind of feel like Mark Templeton has a Dodge Viper in his garage now somehow because of this. But that was the first. It was using Paul. So you could take a Windows app and had a little visual designer and transform it to run on a. Was it a Palm Pilot at that point, or was it a U.S.
Yeah.
Robotics Pilot 5000, you know?
Well, yeah, it was that, whatever.
Yeah, you could transform your Windows Pilot. Form app to run on a Palm Pilot, on Palm OS. And Gabe and I were like, oh, my God, this is the future.
We're going to make it. We're going to win a Viper.
We're going to win a Viper.
We were making plans for how to do this.
Yeah.
But
it
was ahead of its time, and it didn't work that well back then. I think the breadth of technologies that they could support in the back end was very, very limited, and technology has gone a long way since then. And I think we're positioned in a place where we have all this IP of, you know, this HTML5 very rich platform that mimics the Windows event model and mimics the Windows controls and so forth. That's why it's easy for us to do the first phase of interception, which is a new IP, but just, you know, throwing everything to HTML5, which makes it very easy for the planner person. Not the planner tool, the planner person to kind of like point and click the right elements that they want to see on a mobile device. And that gives us huge advantage in creating this type of solution than connecting different technologies at the back end when the time comes after we're done with the Windows side.
And that's the thing, too. It has to be easy to do. I mean, there have been some technology or products that allow you to transform apps that you have access to the source code for and so on. But those are... I mean, that falls on IT people that don't have the wherewithal to pull that off. I mean, it's still our job as desktop virtualization people to deliver that application. So we can say, hey, look, we got this really awesome thing. We just need some developer time to make it, you know, mobilized. That usually falls on deaf ears. But now now the desktop vert guy can say, hey, I can just do this myself. And wow, look at how awesome it is.
And look at the hoops that we jump through for AppV, you know? Like, we have scars and battle wounds, and we go into the trenches to, you know, we're trying to, like, repackage, resequence an application. In this case, all I got to do is, like, tie some chewing gum from this button to that button, and it's working on my phone. I mean, sign me up.
Yeah.
So, seriously, sign me up. So what do I do next? Like, how do I, if I want to buy this, like, you know, okay, I got these Windows apps. I have these people who are on the car hoods with their, you know, Verizon cards and my Zen app. What do I do next? Do you host anything? Are you a service? Is it software I buy and install? Like, how does that all work?
Yeah. I mean, this is come talk to us first. We are working with people that we're working with are people that found us either directly or through partners. But this is actually on-premise software. There's no reason why this can't be hosted out in the cloud. This could be
no technical reason. At least, yeah.
Yeah, this could be an add-on service and, you know, Amazon Workspaces, whatever.
But you know, most of the customers we're working with, I mean, they have VDI infrastructure. They have IT teams. This latches on. The main piece of hardware virtual hardware is an IIS
right,
server.
Right. I mean, you're an agent in Windows. You're an IIS server with your IIS app on it, and then your standalone designer. Like that can run anywhere.
No, it's actually the standalone design is within the browser, so it's served by the IIS as well.
Even better. Okay, so anyways, but so you sell it as on-premises, like I give you money and you give me the software, like, you know, the old school, which I say with love. That's amazing. Thank you. Huzzah! Yeah. Look at that. You can just buy it and then transaction over. Thank you. But obviously then cloud providers and partners and Amazon, for example, could, you know, do something and offer these, you know, cloud desktop stats, all that kind of stuff. But fundamentally, it's just – the software runs. It can be on premises, cloud. You know, come talk to you, as you say.
That's the least path of least resistance for. So yeah, that's made a lot of sense for us to go to market that way.
What are you talking?
It's only one thing you have to bite off on. You don't have to bite off on also cloud. Now you just have to say, hey, I just need to make these apps work, and then that's the only decision you have to make.
Yeah, I mean, the cloud is tough for some of these. But a lot of the folks that we're talking to, these basic work processes, it's not on the table yet.
Yeah, open the data center, their data center to a cloud is for healthcare, you know, people. They don't look at it as an option at the moment.
And then how much does this cost?
So it's we have per user pricing. It basically it is set up to at scale, it'll cost about a 30% of your Zen app spend.
That's a fine answer because you've hemmed and hawed. You used the word at scale. You answered in relative percentages instead of numbers. Look, you're a 6-month-old company. It costs, you know, U.S. Army wants to come knock on the door. It's 40 cents a month. But the point is though is it's cost less than ZenApp. It's extending you know, your existing investments in VDI, Vue, Horizon, ZenApp, Zen Desktop. You're paying a percentage of that on top, and now you're getting all this.
Yeah, and I didn't have to hem and haw. It costs between $120 and $150 per named user.
All right, that's awesome. Thank you. Yeah. And that's and then so you mentioned something about a roadmap, like the mashup kind of thing, where you know potentially pulling multiple backend apps together. What can you tell us about, you know, so your product has been shipping since September, so 6 months of like actual product. First of all, did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, we launched in September. We started bringing on our customers. So yeah.
So what's next? Like, what are you talked about? You've got customers. Obviously, we want to grow customers, but in terms of technology roadmap, you know, where are you? What are you doing? Do you release every few weeks, every day, every once a year? How's that all work?
We release very high frequency, but the next 6 months, I'd say, is that the roadmap is focused on broadening coverage of Windows applications. So today we're covering the, you know, classic Win32 languages, BB6 probably the most common.
64.
.NET, WinForms. We'll be working on Java. We'll be working on SAP. It's got its own flavor of Java. So we'll be heading in that direction. Beyond that, you know, starting to get into actual HTML connectors. So this
starting with the legacy, you know, IE6, IE7 applications that, you know, are stuck there and still require virtualization because you have to virtualize the browser. People don't have this browser on their client. Starting with that and extending further to, you know, data sources and services in the future.
And I guess so. I was going to ask you kind of where it breaks now. I guess it's like with anything, with sequencing apps or repackaging. You know, you're going to find some apps that, for whatever reason, you can't see into them in the right way. And then so your roadmap is just looking at what types of apps cause you the most problems and seeing if you can just kind of keep on punching through that list and get it to where you can support more and more apps.
Right, right. We're talking about the broadest apps coverage that we can get to. We have some technologies that are kind of like for us, not necessarily going to be covered at all, like, you know, highly graphical environments like, you know, OpenGL and things like that, or, you know, Flash Flex that are very, very customized, very graphical, that are not not part of our sweet spot, because we are mapping everything to data controls and so forth. We can handle graphics. We can handle, you know, manipulations of graphic even, but not, you know, if it's just graphics. So we're probably not going to address those applications in the near term, maybe in the future. But generally, our native approach is going to cover, I think, you know, 80% of those Windows data-centric applications that are out there and require mobilization.
Well, at one point, Brian, I think you mentioned it earlier. I mean, we do have the capability to fall back on, a pixel pushing, and we actually got, like, selective pixel pushing. So you might have a, you know, a classic form-based app, but it's got, like, a graph smack in the middle of it, right? And that graph can't be decomposed, recomposed into, you know, HTML5 control. Therefore, we would identify that part of the original application and selectively pixel push that component out to the...
And we have some image processing capabilities there, and you can go and, you know, selectively cut pieces of those images and do all sorts of crazy stuff. Like, you know, for instance, if we don't recognize a ribbon bar, which is owner drawn and it's very customized and so forth, you can still cut the buttons out of it and really reposition them on a mobile device and even say those are actually buttons. So at the back end, it's going to click on that image, but what you're going to see is a button.
Man, it's like the I just imagine like the 60s, like the hippies, like cutting up their jeans and their old quilts and like making their own kind of stuff. And now in San Francisco, like 40 years later, we're like taking the apps. It's like, nah, man, like I got this. It's like slice and dice, and it's some of this and some of that, and some Java and some here, and some actual images going through. And it's like, yeah, it's on your phone, man. Check it out. I'm glad, you know, I don't know who wrote this note here. I'm really glad that you guys are doing this, because it sounds really, really hard. Like, I just want this to exist. Like, I don't want to do it. I mean, I don't mind designing my apps, but actually figure out how to hook into all these different back-end app platforms and deconstruct and reconstruct the UI and everything. I just want that to exist in the world. And I'm really, really grateful that you guys, like, seem to be actually into, like, oh, we can make this work. And I'm like, wow, that sounds hard. That's, yes, please make that work. So I can have it.
When you mentioned, like, SAP has their own custom variation on this.
Yeah, what'd you say? Like, SAP has their own version of Java or something? Like, oh,
they have their own, you know, it's like UI automation. They have their own GUI scripting capabilities that you can hook up to. You don't have to go all the way to Win32, and it gives you enough information that, you know, that can help you intercept the application efficiently and quickly. So we're not going to go. We can go to the Win32 level with SAP, but it's, again, they have a lot of custom stuff and their own things. So
we're glad you're figuring that out.
thanks for that. So what's next for you guys? So you were at Citrix Summit, which was in January, and I assume that was kind of, if you came out in September, that was probably your first, like, sort of big show in this space. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, it was. We had started dialogues with the existing channel that's out there, and Citrix Summit was a great opportunity to meet a lot of folks and definitely emphasize that, you know, there's a great path to market here, right? I mean, you know, for us not to leverage that existing channel, those existing relationships that both Citrix and, you know, and their partners already have, would be crazy, right? These guys already know, which customers, which apps, what the implementations look like. A very, very efficient way to actually meet people. So we'll continue down that path. Absolutely.
Well, and that fits in with me. Like, I'm not a mobility guy. You know, I'm using air quotes here. And I'm a Windows desktop guy. And so, like, all this, you know, as you said earlier, that you know, EMM, MDM, MAM, all that, whatever that is, like, yeah, it came out a few years ago. They've been chomping away. It kind of does what it needs to do. There's still issues here and there. Jack has made a career out of all that. That's all fine, but to me, I'm a Windows app guy, and all the stuff that Jack does with enterprise mobility, for me anyway, is like academically interesting, but it doesn't like blow my mind. You know, it's just like yeah, he managed phones. Whereas this, the Windows apps, like, this is the bread and butter of the enterprise. These are things like you guys laughed earlier, but like, it's serious. The guys who wrote these apps are dead, and these apps are business critical. And we have to deliver them to everything, and they've been around forever. And like, you know, Jack, to your point, we could spend all this time rebuilding, re-implementing this app for millions of dollars and lots of years for some platform that's going to be obsoleted next year.
do we want to rebuild all that business logic?
This to me is a fantasy. Like this to me is this is what's next in our space. Like I cannot say that strongly enough. Like this is huge to me. This is what's next, and I'm just really really excited that there's people doing this who aren't me, and that I can just like follow, understand, play with. Like I'm super excited about this. So I really want. I had heard of Redo Mobility. I kind of thought that you were like a mobile company in Jack's space because mobility in the name. So right there, that's like fail on me. Actually, you guys picked the name, so whatever.
Yeah, right. Fail on us. Sorry.
Redo Mobile Apps. Redo Desktop. Mobile Desktop. Well, whatever. Anyway.
We put your Windows apps on mobile devices.
.com.
We wrote this in the VDI Delusion book. I think it was the last chapter even, the what the future looks like. And when we wrote about it, it was wishful thinking. Our block diagram of this solution was you have a Windows app, something happens, and it works on a mobile device. And now this exists.
Yeah, that's something. Right.
Yeah.
I'm looking.
I believe I even presented that exact flow back in 2012.
Wait, is that I'm looking at the book right now. Let me go to the end. Mobile devices for the future, app management, identity, data management.
Yeah.
I'm literally
Brian's literally paging through the book right now.
That's good radio.
Yeah. Hang on.
You know, I don't think that we would have done – I don't think anyone in the right mind would have set out doing this. I think that the fact that we came from – the HTML5 development space, we had done all of the work, we have a full library of HTML5 controls. We have this powerful app server. This last piece of it, though hard and, you know, smart, we kind of had an advantage in getting here faster.
Hang on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was definitely listening to what you were saying and not just reading this book and very excited to interrupt you. From the VDI Delusion. Published in March of 2012. There's another possibility. Companies are building solutions that let admins create HTML-based front ends for existing Windows desktop applications. The final result is apps that look and feel like native HTML5 apps instead of the HTML5 Windows remoting clients that give us Windows-looking apps inside a browser. Is this the way the last few Windows apps will be delivered from the data center in 10 or 20 years? Perhaps. that was our closing words of the VDI Delusion from 3 years ago. So... you guys are doing it. You're doing it. We talked about that. I'm serious. Like, this is not me, like, fake excited because, like, you know, it's another IT vendor. Like, this is actually what I want to exist in the world of desktop application delivery for Windows desktop applications. And this is sick. I'm so excited you guys are here.
It's great to meet you.
Yeah.
So, sorry about the whole Boston thing. I mean here, like, you know, not here. But this is awesome. Yeah, I'm so glad you guys are here in the space. This is really great. So I'm done gushing. But this is awesome.
Awesome. We appreciate it. Definitely appreciate all you guys help and attention in writing about the space. And even app refactoring. Like I said, it's good to have a space. So
I'm somebody.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
The new phone books are here.
All right. Okay. So we're a little bit over our time. So what's next? So, okay, I need to get a demo of your stuff. Like, we'll talk about that later. Hopefully we'll see you. We got Synergy coming up. We got VMworld coming up. We got 2 Brian Forms coming up.
We'll be there everywhere. So
awesome. All right. So that was the voice of, Josh Epstein. Is it Epstein or Epstein? Epstein?
Epstein's good.
Epstein.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. So Josh Epstein, and Itzik Spitzen, both, with Redo Mobility. In Boston. Guys, thank you so much, A, for building this product, and B, for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Yep. Great conversation.
So, Jack, thank you for being here. Sorry, I'm getting weird feedback. Justin's twiddling with levers. Okay, so anyway, Jack, thank you for being here. Gabe, thank you for being here. Justin Meisner, our engineer. Mariah Lyons, our project manager. To all of you on St. Patrick's Day, happy St. Patrick's Day. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Brian Madden from San Francisco, and we'll see you all next week.